is Smashville Live.
Johansson, right side, Orbison, and the score!
From the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com.
What a rocket!
Brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling.
Go in, everybody! Go in!
Welcome to Smashville Live, on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
And welcome into a best of edition of Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I am Chase McCabe. I've had a lot of fun this season being able to do a lot of these shows out and about at our various locations. And it's all brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Beer. Really appreciate all of them for being on board. We were out at the Brew House in Cool Springs, which is a great place that you should check out. Just about a month or so ago, and I was joined right before the trading deadline by a couple of my favorites, Austin Watson and Craig Smith. They were nice enough to come out and hang out with the fans and talk to me and Hal Gill. And we got into a lot of different things, including Austin Watson telling a story of what it was like playing with skillsy Hal Gill.
You would have played with Hal, right?
Yeah.
Did you both play with Hal?
Yeah. I actually got a funny story about playing with Hal. So,
is it appropriate?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very, very appropriate. Very appropriate.
Very silly.
one of the PG ones. I keep the other ones in memory bank.
I've seen the rated R ones.
So, when I got called up, it was the lockout year.
Yeah.
I played six games, I think. I scored against Calgary, and the next day I came to the rink looking for where my jersey was or whatever. Like, the, you know, you have different colors for your different lines, and for some reason I had a D-colored jersey on. They were all blue at this point. I'm looking, I'm like, that can't be a good sign. Like, this isn't good. So I actually practiced as Skillsy's D partner for the day and was on a plane back to Milwaukee right after that, so... Yeah.
Well, he went to Trotsky and said, I can't play with this guy. Just send me down.
I'd rather go back to Milwaukee if you're going to make me try this. I can't do it.
This guy is just too crazy for me. And here we are.
Make a play, Skillsy.
Here we are doing a radio show. How about that? So a few weeks ago, you guys had the break, the All-Star break, had a week off. What I know, you're, you know, being a dad, so that's like a full-time job with you. But did you guys get away? Craig, what did you do?
Yeah, we went out to Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Very nice.
A little town right outside of there. So we're just right at the base of the mountain. We always like going somewhere, the mountains or something cold. Yeah. We like being active during something. So I'm not a beach guy. I don't like sitting around. I don't like not being able to do stuff. And so it was good with dog sledding. They had like an elk refuge there and a bunch of great restaurants, so it was fun.
Austin, what did you and the fam do?
We were in Miami, and we were at the beach with Livy for most of the time.
She pretty much runs the show, right?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, at this point, she's all over the place, and it's awesome, though. Vacation looks a little different nowadays, but it's definitely... I would say most times more fun. Just seeing her just kind of running around. She'd wake up in the morning, run herself ragged until 2 o'clock, take a nap, and do it all over again.
How much fun was it for you to, and you too, Craig, but with the family skate at the Winter Classic, having her out there on the ice, being able to, I don't know how much skating she's doing at this point, but being able to take her around.
Oh, she was ripping. No, she had the skates on. She wasn't really.
A backbreaker.
Exactly. I'm like,
just bend over and carry her around.
Essentially, she's getting heavy enough where that kind of sucks right now. But no, the Winter Classic itself, just not only family skate, but just kind of having everybody around and being able to enjoy that with your family, with everybody else's family. Like, I mean, a lot of us have played together for so long. Like, I know Smitty's family. Like, we know a lot of the families are kind of intertwined that way, where right. Everybody knows each other. It's like kind of a little reunion again when everybody gets together. I just thought it was a super cool experience.
Yeah, and your wife, Aaliyah, was there.
So yeah, my wife, my mom, and my dad. So that was good. I thought the whole thing was well put on. I thought, you know, it kind of blew me away with how the stadium was set up, how it looked, and just how close it was to downtown and how easy it was for our families to kind of get around. They took care of us. It was a great experience.
Yeah, you brought this up, Austin, of how you guys have been around each other for so long and the families have kind of grown up together. You all got married around the same time and having kids and everything. And it's a perfect segue because I said I would do this. Shout out to Mark and Sherry. They're in the audience. They just got engaged.
All right.
So I said that I would give them a shout out. Do you have any advice, Craig?
They got engaged here?
No, they just got engaged.
Not, so literally 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, 5 minutes ago.
Like that's Smashville Live is a great thing, but that's we've arrived now.
We're the big time.
We're big time. They're getting engaged. Congrats, you guys. Why are you going to break into the prison?
Look.
Jokes.
He's earned his stripes. He can say that.
he's retired. He's allowed to say those things.
Good for you guys.
You can ask a question now.
Oh, you want me to ask?
Yeah.
Well, I want to know, what do you guys do to get away from the game? You had a day where you game last night, you park it, you go out. What do you do today? What's your downtime? Obviously, your kids and your dog, but is there something that you guys do in your downtime to get away?
Today, on your point of marriage and significant others, I went and picked up a rental car because my significant other had a little fender bender. So that's what I did today.
You're taking care of the family.
No, I think everybody's different. When the weather is nice, golf for me is something that I do during the summer a lot to just kind of get away on my own or with a couple buddies and just kind of, like you said, step away, just kind of separate yourself from the speed of life nowadays. Everything's so fast, whether it's your job or everything else going on. So for me, during the summer and when the warm weather is, whether it's just go out to the golf club and hit balls on the range or get an opportunity to play. Like, I love golf, and for me, that's a huge reprieve. Not really good right now, though. It's
I was going to say, handicap?
Because
you're pretty good. You're smooth.
Right now it's 4, and it's not helping me much because I can't play at it right now. It's middle of the season. I can't play at that right now.
Yeah, do you really get to play much during the season? Do you guys take your clubs on the road?
No. No, not like baseball where we're in the city for a week and you can play golf.
That'd be nice, eh?
It would be nice.
Are you much of a golfer, Greg?
I mean, I guess maybe once a week, But yeah.
Don't let him fool you. He can whack around pretty good.
I swing hard.
So Smitty, what do you do when you're downtime other than just write love songs?
Yeah.
Are you still playing guitar?
Yeah. I like guitars. I like sitting around playing if I get 10, 15 minutes, but. For this point of the season, I mean, we've been gone for so much.
It's no downtime.
Couch sounds real nice right now.
I'm with you, buddy.
Do you get
just
home
relax
and have a to-do
and take
list,
care
though?
Of yourself? Like, I mean, there's always stuff to do, but I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't get handed the list when I get home. But,
no, not often. Unless I really put things off. At that point, it's probably not good because nothing's probably gotten done.
It was sad for me to say, but like when I was playing, if I did one thing after practice on you have a practice day, I'd have practice, I'd go have lunch, and then I had to do one thing. So like I changed the oil or I went and got a haircut. Like that was just one thing.
Yeah, you can't do more than one thing.
No? You can. It really is. It is a lot, and it's hard to explain. It's other people who do a million things in one day, but it really is your mindset. Right now, you guys are focused on hockey, right? I mean, that's what you do.
Especially in between. I mean, you get a couple days. I mean, you want to do something, but it's absolutely right. It's just like you do a load of laundry, and then you're just like, all right,
that
we call it good.
Call it a day.
No. But it really is. It really is.
You guys were on the road for Valentine's Day. Did you do something for Valentine's few days before? I know you did because you told us about that on the show, but were you able to have a little Valentine's date before?
I want to hear what Smitty did. We're pointing around like everybody knows what Smitty did. What did Smitty do?
He wrote a new love song.
Did you write a love song?
No. We went out to, I think it was on the 13th. No, we left on the 13th.
The 12th.
The 12th. We went to a Mediterranean place called Lira.
Okay.
Over in East Nashville. So it was great. My wife had the idea, and we set it up and went and had a nice dinner and kind of celebrated that night. So it was great.
There we go. That's pretty much what I did too. Went with Ryan Ellis and his wife. We went to the Catbird Seat.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I hadn't been there before, so it was something I'd been looking to do, and it just kind of came up that Valentine's Day was coming up, and we were able to get in to do that. So that was neat. It was a really cool experience. Like I said, I hadn't been there before.
It's
but,
a life experience. Yeah, it's not just a meal.
I was very impressed. It was cool.
And if anybody's listening over there, it's tough to get in. So yeah. I could throw you some tickets or something. We can make something happen.
It is. It's a tough get.
We'll take some questions from the audience in our next segment. But, you know, as we kind of do the off-the-ice stuff, and Austin, you know, we talked about this before, but this past year and a half or so for you, I know, has been quite the journey, and it's been a cool experience to see you year and a half about sober.
Yeah, year January 25th this time around. So thank you. Thank
you. Very cool.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's, you know, like you mentioned the word journey. It is a journey, and it's, you know, it is a one day at a time thing. I think when I first got into the recovery scene was after my first year here. So I played a full year here that was topsy-turvy, to say the least. And after that, I'd gotten things kind of straightened around in my personal life. And, you know, over the past, 4 or 5 years ago now? Over the past 4 or 5 years now, you know, life has changed, and life kind of takes its own shape. There's different challenges and different you know, positive things that happen on a daily, weekly basis. But, you know, the last year or so has been an awesome year. Really just trying to continue to grow personally every day. I mean, you know, we talk about it from a hockey standpoint in here, where we're trying to get better every day, and we're, you know, working toward a goal. I mean, it's the same kind of concept, except you just – I can't drink.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's just that's the goal. If you know, if I've gone about my day to day, and God willing, in the next 3 hours, I'm not going to take a drink, so I'm going to go to bed and I accomplish my goal that day, and we'll wake up and do it again the next day.
How cool is it to see the support that not only you got from these fans, teammates like Craig, but the organization? Does everybody was like, you know what, Austin needs our help. We're going to rally around him.
Yeah, I think it's good. You know what, from a fan and community perspective, it's incredible. Always a ton of love and thanks out for the Nashville community and the way that they've been there to support me. I think for my teammates, it was pretty easy to support me because. It's a little less much of a task on their hands if I'm not
running around,
you know, having Waddy on the loose a little bit isn't that easy on guys. But look, we've all kind of been together for a long time. I mean, Smitty and I have been teammates now for 5 years. You know, not just my ups and downs, but everybody's. We're there for each other. We see the good, the bad, and the ugly, and all our careers, all our lives away from the game, you know, and we're there for each other. And I wouldn't, I'm deeply appreciative and grateful, but I wouldn't have really kind of expected anything less of these guys because they've always been awesome.
When we come back, we're going to bring in one of our favorites. He's going to tell a lot of stories. Brent Peterson, longtime associate coach. He's been a broadcaster as well. He joined me a few weeks ago on Smashville Live, so we'll talk to him as it is a best of edition. With everything going on with COVID-19, we are unable to be out and about like we have been all year, so we're bringing you some of our favorites over the last few months for Smashville Live. So that is what we're doing, and Brent Peterson is going to join us next. It's all brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Beer. More with Petey next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into the best of edition of Smashville Live. Chase McCabe hanging out with you, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Beer. Brent Peterson was my guest at the Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue, and a lot of different things with him. Of course, he's been with the organization since day one. So we got into old stories about Barry Trotz and the early days of the Preds, what the trading deadline was kind of like for him, both as a player and a coach. So a lot of good stuff with Petey.
This time of year, trade deadline coming up in a few weeks. It's exciting from the broadcasting standpoint because you never know who's going to move where. But for coaches and players, what is this time of year like?
Well, for a coach, it's the same as a general manager. If they're talking and they have ideas what they want to do, whether you're a seller or a buyer or standing pat. But the player, it's a terrible time for the players, I think. I remember going through about 11 of these or 10 of these. And when I was hurt one year, I was gone. So it was maybe 10 times I was could have been traded at the deadline. And I was traded once before. When I did play, it wasn't at the deadline, but I just felt awful. You know, you wake up in the morning, and I wanted to be traded. I wanted to be traded out of Detroit to get to Buffalo. But you just feel sick to your stomach because you've been with these guys for so long. You do you're on the road with them and that, and then you're gone to another team. You got to make new friends, and it wasn't that bad.
The family aspect, too?
Yeah, one year I got traded from Vancouver to Hartford, and I ended up going. It was about a week before Christmas when I got traded with McCourt and Foligno and them, and we got traded for a bunch of guys from Detroit. So I went up, played a couple games, went back, and on New Year's Eve I drove from Detroit with a U-Haul with all my stuff in the car, U-Haul all the way down to Buffalo. We found a tree, the last tree on the a Christmas tree, and we went and celebrated Christmas the next day.
Oh, wow.
And then we just got into our house that night. We got in about 11 o'clock at night, and then we had Christmas the next day. So Christmas Eve was the only day I could go because we used to play all the time at Christmas time.
Yeah.
So we played the next day. I had the tree and the dinner, and we went to the store, just got some stuff real fast. They had fed the kids, went and played a game.
It's changed a little bit, yeah.
Now
you have the Christmas break, which I think is good.
It's great thing that they do now.
But, look, and I'm curious, too, of – as you know, as associate coach, how much input did you and Barry have during those times, especially as the team got more and more competitive and you knew that playoff pushes were going to happen?
Nobody's more prepared than David Poile. And he'd go, before he makes a trade, he goes over all the – he calls everybody he can and asks about the guy that you want to get and he always keeps Barry – he at least keeps the head coach. The head coach would let us know, but
yeah.
Barry would always know what was going on. Barry would have input. David's very transparent. He's very open to things, and he wants our ideas. He wants us to be inquisitive about everything, and just make sure that you're a part of it. But your job is still a coach.
Yeah.
So we used to have meetings before we got on the ice. Some days we always had it on a game day. We always played on the trade deadline all the time.
Yeah.
Now they moved it to Monday. So it's not quite – it used to be always the second Tuesday in March or first Tuesday in March, I think, all the time.
Yeah, it seems like it's earlier this year.
It is earlier. It's a week earlier, and it's also – it's on a Monday, I think. Yeah. And so
– So they play the day before.
Right. So
Columbus.
The night before in Columbus, right after – that's a four-game road trip they come back from, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's going to be a tough time for
– 2 days before.
A lot of guys that want to stay here, and yet some guys, you know – and we were talking earlier about, you know, tourists and those guys that there was rumors they were going to try to trade them. And now John's got them playing great.
Yeah.
Granville and even Smitty's playing good. Everybody's playing better now.
Yeah, you're definitely seeing a difference.
So I think and if we could continue this, it'd be great. You know, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. You're going to lose some even playing good. But you have to make sure that you play consistent. And you can't just play a great game like that, throwing yourself bodies all over the ice, and then going to Calgary and then just play so-so. It's got to be a top-notch performance every single night.
Yeah, and that's what he's trying to get out of these guys. Yeah.
And he's done a good job of giving back the confidence to Turris, the confidence to Granlund, and the confidence to Yaron Kronk and these guys. These guys that haven't played very well to start the year. And I think John's found out from the assistant coaches who've been here all year that, you know, this is what we tried, this is what didn't work, this is what worked, and it's been good so far.
How hard is it for an assistant to go through a change like this? I mean, the system that you had and the guy that you were working under is now gone. Now you have a new boss, right, essentially, that comes in here, but they're staying. I mean, for now,
they're there, and they got to know the system, and they got to do it. Just like we stood around and watched. I always say, don't think it hurts the team, mm-hmm, because so. Like a guy standing still over there, he says, what should I do? Where should I go? Where am I supposed to be? And it's too late by then.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure that the guy knows his system. And all. When we used to get guys, we got Brendan Witt 1 year. He was the only big guy that we really went after. We wanted a big defenseman. And he was at the end of his career. So he didn't play as well as we wanted him to. But I didn't even go over a system with him because he couldn't comprehend what we were going to tell him. We're going to do this on the power play, put this on the penalty kill, and just go out and play hockey, we told him. And he played good for the first five games, and then he sort of fell off. But you can't put too much in their heads because they can't think. You can't think. You got to read and react in hockey, and it's a tough thing to do. And it's a tough thing when a player goes from one team to another, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's definitely tough. It's Smashville Live here at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. Now, I know you've coached in the league, played in the league for a long time, and I've talked to current players, former players, yourself, of how much the league has changed over the last few years. And I look in the 20-plus years that the Predators have been a franchise and just how different this league is now. I mean, there's a lot more speed. You don't have the big guys as much anymore. There's still a place for them.
Right.
But it seems like skill and speed seems to be the way that the league's going.
Well, big skill guys are better than small skill guys, but if you can't find the big skill guys, the small skill guys and speedy guys are the guys you want, because you got to be able to skate in this league. That's number one. And the reason why we had such a good team the 1 year that everybody got hurt at the end of the year, but we started with Krieger, came first off. We were so fast compared to other teams.
06-07.
The new rules came in, you know, the hooking and that, and you used to get away with all that hooking. Guy gets a stick on his hands, now they're calling it automatically. So the new rules came in, and ERAT was good, and Korea was good, and Leg One was good that year. And we had a good team, and we traded for Forsberg another year, and we had a good bunch of guys that should have gone past the first round, but we didn't because guys were injured, and we had half the team playing, and we had, you know, they were bringing up guys like O'Reilly at the end of the year, and to give us some, not the one in St. Louis, but his brother, and just to fill in our, because we were so shorthanded, and San Jose just beat us, but it was an interesting thing that the guys, you know, they struggle at times, but I think our guys are going to be good. And I don't think David's going to have to. I don't think he can do a lot, but if you get into one big defenseman, and the league's changed, so even a skilled defenseman, you're not going to get that from. You're not going to get Crook out of Boston or those kind of guys. You're going to have to find and Tenorti might be the guy. Tenorti's played very well.
Yes.
He's developed his skills very well. He's adapted to it. He's an older guy. Not an older guy, but he's a middle-20s guy that can play a little bit. And he's playing more and more. He was out there in the last. I saw him go around the net with a minute to go in the third period. He was on the ice. So they got to have confidence in him to have him on the ice at that time of the game.
Was the 06-07 team probably the best team that you can remember having here?
Yeah, I think we had 110 points.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was.
And then the President's Trophy year, obviously they surpassed it.
Yeah, that was the most points we've ever had when I was there, and it was a great team. It was a good bunch of guys, and they got along and they played hard. And was that? Did we lose four games to one to the San Jose? I can't remember. It was sad that we lost that series.
But everybody was hurt. That's as you were saying.
Hurt, yeah.
That was the problem.
You know, we might have been just as good the year that Phoenix beat us out.
Yeah,
we had the Red Hawks. That was a good team too. Those were probably the two best teams.
Yeah, that was a good year too because you win the first round.
Right,
it was 2 years in. That was Detroit.
Beat Detroit
in the first round, and then go to Phoenix in the second round and rattle off the season.
Did their thing that night.
But I can remember a guy that, you know, I used to work with telling the story that he was standing in the lobby of the hotel. Jeremy Benefield's his name. Was standing in the lobby of the hotel, and Barry comes up to him and says, so can you skate? And he goes, not very well. And he goes, so you'll play goal? Because you guys were just riddled with injuries.
Know,
Ramsey Abeid had been called up.
Right. It was really sad because we hurt ourselves too. I think whoever took a slap shot in practice and it broke somebody's ankle or his leg and
Shea hurt somebody.
You know, it just bad things happened, and It was like why we waited 6-7 years to make the playoffs or whatever, 6 years to get to this team. You know, we went from making the first round and losing out to Detroit in the six games to going to finally beating Detroit in the first round. And we just, it just, things just fell apart, but that's the way it goes, and now you just got to go on. And I think we have no players from that era.
Yeah.
I think Peck is the only one. I've been gone 9 years now.
Yeah.
And I think Peck is the only guy that was around when I was
That coaching. Seems right, because 05, I think he got called up once in 05, you know, for a quick stint. Because he's in the team picture, and I laugh every time I see him. He's a baby.
Yeah, exactly. I had a black mustache back then, too.
You did. You did. Barry still had some hair.
That's right. Barry did have some hair, didn't he?
What was it that was so special about coaching with Barry Trotz? Because you guys were day one here from the very beginning.
You know what? He's very honest with the guys. He just tells it like it is. And if they don't like it, it's too bad. But he builds – see, if you're a coach and you distance yourself from your players – and you think you can't be like Scotty Bowman was. You can't do that in this day and age.
Yeah,
you have no relationship. You have to really have some kind of relationship with your players. You build that relationship up where you can trust each other, and then when you have to come down hard on those guys, you'll survive it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, and every coach has his own style, but I just think Barry built relationships. He's carrying a big bag of wedding presents in or kids' birthdays. Coming in, I said, "Who's that for?" He said, "Some of the players." He's giving, you know, wedding gifts, and he's just a great guy. He gives you, he has time for you.
Yeah.
Like there's many times that I heard guys say, "I just saw your coach down in Home Depot. He's always at Home Depot on Saturday morning, walking around talking to everybody. It was great." So that's the kind of guy he is. He gives you time. He's honest, but he's a tough guy. He's tough on the players, but he's not tough on the players. You know what I mean? He's just a great person. And when you're a great person and you love the guy, you'll play harder for him, and he's got the honor of playing pretty good hockey for not having any superstars or any stars, real stars.
How'd you get the job here? Did you know Barry before you got this job?
I did not know Barry, and he interviewed me about 6 months before when we were in Red Deer. He drove up from Calgary. Him and Paul Gardner were out scouting around everywhere and getting the guys for the expansion draft. And Barry says, "Can I come to Red Deer and talk to you?" So I went to his hotel room. We talked.
So you were coaching in Red Deer?
I was coaching in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, Portland, okay.
And we were in Red Deer on the road, and Barry says, and so I met him, and that was the first time I met him. And then they're all up, and we were in Toronto. I was in Toronto for the All-Star game. I was the coach of the All-Star team. And they met, and they had all their scouts there for it's a game. It's an All-Star game for the whole league, for the whole Canadian Hockey League. And Bobby Orr and I were coaching one team, and Don Cherry and the guy from Ottawa was coaching the other team. We kicked their butts, and we had a great time. We had all the best players from the West were there, and it was a lot of fun, and Bobby Orr was great. I didn't ask for anything from him. I didn't ask for a signed stick. And in the mail the next week came a picture, a beautiful picture of him diving, you know, the diving.
Yeah.
1970, I think it was, 1970, when they beat the St. Louis Blues in four games. He got the puck out of the down to the corner, pass out to him, he's diving in the air and scoring the goal, the winning goal, and the Boston Bruins won the Stanley Cup that year. And he, beautiful picture of that, and I didn't ask for anything. He wrote on it to Brent, "Thanks for teaching me how to coach this team." He was great. He was a great guy.
When we come back on this best of edition of Smashville Live, there is something that is near and dear to the heart of Brent Peterson that we will get into. You will not want to miss that. We appreciate him for doing all of the hard work for PD, for Parkinson's. We will do that when we come back at Smashville Live Best of Edition, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Beer on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are rolling right along on this Best of Edition of Smashville Live. Due to COVID-19, of course, we're not able to be out and about like we usually would, so we're bringing you some of our favorites, and we continue the conversation, all brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Beer. See what I did there? I didn't forget. I just worked it in. Brent Peterson is our guest right now, longtime associate coach and broadcaster for the Nashville Predators, and of course, Peterson for Parkinson's. Brent has Parkinson's disease. And he tells us about the work that he's doing with his organization to help find a cure.
Every year, I call it the back to school dinner, is because it's like when everybody gets back together.
That's right.
Is Petey's Preds party for Parkinson's, and I know this is near and dear to your heart. It's well documented that you have Parkinson's disease.
Yes.
You said you play golf 6 days a week. It hasn't seemed to stop you or slow you down at all. But
well, it doesn't mean I play good. But
well, I don't know. I've heard you're pretty good.
No,
I've heard
not.
You're pretty good.
I just love the game, so I have nothing to do all day, so I just go play golf.
Let's start with the dinner and then the golf tournament. That, like I said, you kick off the Pred season every year with a dinner, and you have alums that come back, see former players. The whole team gets involved. I mean, the coaches, everybody's there, and that has to feel good to you to have that kind of support from the team.
The management has been fantastic. The management and the players come every year, and all of them played last year, and they're just fantastic people when they give a whole day up and a night for the dinner. And we have, like you say, we have a dinner the night before, and we have an auction, and the comedians have been fantastic over the years.
Oh, they're so funny. Dusty Slay this year was awesome.
Oh, he was great, wasn't he? He was, and even Bergazzi or whatever his name, he was great the year before. We've had, Ryan Hamilton was good. We've had some great, and I got to give Chaz Corzian a little boost because he's the one that gets the entertainment for us, but the comedians have been great. They've been worth the price of admission just for that. And then they get a nice dinner and they sit down there. There's 1,000 people on the floor of the arena. And it's really good. And then the next day we have two shotguns because we have so many teams that want to play. And we usually sell out at 54 teams of five, which is great. So we put, as many as we can out in the morning. Then in the afternoon they have another shotgun. And us and the Predators split the proceeds. And we always make good money in those 2 days. So it's been a real treat to do it, real treat to have the Predators involved with it. And they've been nothing but supportive of whatever we've tried to do with PFP, Peterson for Parkinson's.
So with you, you've had it for how long now?
Well, I was diagnosed in 2001.
2001. So
I have 20 years.
Almost, yeah.
20 years is coming up. And that's when I was diagnosed. You have it before you get diagnosed, but
right. You
just don't know about it until your hands start shaking or you can't move a limb or whatever, but... It's kind of a mentally draining disease because everybody says it's physical because you can't walk or you can't. Sometimes my tongue's tied and sometimes I can't speak and sometimes I'm so tied up that I can't even move. But I usually get out and try to do some things. And we have Rock City Boxing and we have some good therapies for Parkinson's, and one of them is boxing, but. Another one is riding bikes and doing those kind of things, and you got to stay in shape. And I lost some weight and I lost some muscle mass, and it's been really tough for me lately because I get my immune system doesn't work as well as it when I'm sick. But I get over colds still fast, and I can do a lot of things. So it's been really good.
And you said about 9 years ago you had the brain stimulation.
Yes.
I remember sitting in Bridgestone Arena, and they show the video of you going in for surgery.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, like catching the ball and walking around.
It was pretty cool. It was surgery I had to be awake for.
Yeah.
And so they did put two electrodes in my brain and sewed it up, and I didn't feel a thing. It was like being in the dentist chair. Eh? You can hear the noise of the. When they're drilling in the brain, and then you go through to it, and it goes down to the bottom and gets through, and you could hear it, but you could hear the drill going, but you couldn't feel it, so it was good. And then I had to be awake to test me.
Sure.
Where they put the electrodes, because the electrodes could go in different places. If you don't put them in the right place, you could go blind. You could do a lot of things that aren't very appealing, but so they put them in the right place, and they got it. Took me about a year to get it straightened out, and so it was on the right dials, and I have my own remote that I can move it in and out, and it's pretty cool deal that what they did for me. So it's been good,
and it allows you to do things you want to do.
You know what it does? It allows me. I don't have to take medications, many medications. And for every medication I took, I always had there was always a side effect or something. So when you have a side effect, then you have to take another medication for another side effect. This took away every drug I had to take except for one. I take it like four times a day, and then and the DBS was great. Deep brain stimulation, what they call it, DBS. It was great. It's great. Still working. It's always going to be working. It's right in my brain. It sometimes makes me crazy because I talk fast. I can't slow down because I got energy in my brain. I'm just going at a mile a minute, and I
thought that was just the coach in you.
No, that's I never used to be like that, but I was calm, cool, and collected on the bench.
So how much have you seen since your diagnosis, how much have you seen the research and the treatments all change?
Yeah, the treatments and the medications have come a long ways. I still don't know how you get Parkinson's, still don't know what the cause is. But the medications have been great. They take away right away your trembling and your stiffness of gait and that kind of thing. The only thing that doesn't help is your balance. Sometimes I fall down in the sand traps. I do snow angels and trying to get out of there. And the guys are all, can we help you? I said, no, I'll be all right. So I fall down a lot because my balance isn't there. But it's been good. The Predators have been so good to me. They could have kicked me out on the street and just said, you know, you're not. But Sean Henry and the Predators, and David Poyle and the Predators, they've been fantastic. They let me park in the garage still, and they let me, and they pay me a little bit of money to do some, you know, consulting work for them, and I can keep my health care and those kind of things. And it's just been, they've been fantastic to let me work for them and keep going. And I don't do a lot, but I do some things, and it's been really fun.
So I know that you've mentioned in the past, and you know, being going to the dinners for about 5 years now. I guess it has been however long I've been covering the team. You've mentioned you've talked to Michael J. Fox. He's obviously one that has Parkinson's. Ozzy Osbourne just came out and announced that he's been diagnosed with Parkinson's as well. What has that whole thing been like of being able to connect with other people, not just celebrities, but you know, other people that have this disease and be able to swap notes and things like that?
Most people, we've now developed support groups in Franklin. We support Mount Juliet, Clarksville, those kind of places, and they're all under Peterson for Parkinson's umbrella. And we fund, that's what we use our money for, to fund their events and their get-togethers and all their things. So that's what we do with the money. But anyways, the you know, it's been good because most of the people are calling me about the DBS to ask me how I got through it. It's a four-week process, and it's a tough to do brain surgery. Yeah. And people are scared to death to do it. But Darren's mother,
yep,
and she's been great ever since. She, you know, I talked. They call me, and I'll talk to anybody. I talked to two guys from Sweden that were trying to get DBS done, and they most of them ask about DBS because everybody, Parkinson's is an individual disease. It's different for everybody. It's different for, you know, you can either have a tremble in your finger, you can have a slowness of gait, you can have a falling down with no balance, all those kind of things, and nobody has one, you know, the one thing that nobody has the same thing that you can get with Parkinson's, but it's been good because I've been called by a lot of people around the world. Brian Grant and I are good friends now. After he was a great guy, played for the Miami Heat and the Portland Trailblazers, and he lives in Portland now. He has a foundation also, and we keep in touch. And he's been a great guy. Michael J. Fox, it was great to talk to him about it. Twice I talked to him about it.
I'm glad to see him doing, you know,
he's doing
TV
great.
Shows.
Yeah, he's doing great. He's doing great, and he didn't have DBS, so
I think he.
He just said that he didn't want to have a brain surgery this time of his life, so that's why he didn't do it. But he's been medicated very well, and he's done a good job.
Is there a certain point with the disease that you have to have the brain surgery, or can you do it at any time?
You have to be in good shape, and you have to be pretty younger. The older people couldn't handle brain surgery. They couldn't handle the anesthesia, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that mostly anybody that's in fairly healthy, good shape and fairly healthy can do it, and... So, you know what? It doesn't work for everybody. That's the problem. Like, guys call me, and I said, it works for me. That's all I can tell you. And they go in, and they get it done, and it doesn't work for them. So certain kinds of – if it'll take you off your medications, that's when you do it. If it doesn't, then it's no use doing it. So I was able to do it, and Barry tells us a good story about me. First day I was in there, and I was, you know, bouncing off the walls, and – he said, well, I need to talk to you, Brent. And I'm walking around the corner. I'm almost running down the aisle. And he says, Brent, come back and get me. And I said, I was gone. He said, I couldn't find me for the whole day because I was just bouncing off the walls that first day I got there. So it was kind of interesting the way that worked out.
So if people, you know, like we said, to start this, have the dinner and everything at the beginning of the year, and you raise a lot of money. But if people want to donate, if people want to help out throughout the year, how can they do that?
PetersonForParkinsons.org. PetersonForParkinsons.org is our website, and you can donate right on the website, and it's very good. And we'd love to have your contribution or be a part of it. We just there's a group in town. I can't remember the group, and I just read the emails that came in here that called and said they wanted to give a free performance for us, you know, for another event. Yeah. So we're getting all kinds of people coming out of the woodwork because Parkinson's are shut-ins. They don't come out because they're afraid that, you know, they're shaking around. Yeah. And they don't want to be seen by people, and they just stay in. One guy I give two tickets to. I give two tickets every night to a Parkinson's patient and their caregivers or their care partners.
Yeah.
And they come to the game, and they sit up at 108 where my tickets are, and we give them every game. We give them out to them. And the foundation buys them for them, and they come to every game. One guy said to me, he says, I haven't been outside the house in 3 years, and I had a great time. He sent me a note. I had a great time at the game. It was fun. I hope I can do it again. I says, we'll get you out there again. So it was great to hear.
Well, very, very, very cool. Kudos to you and everybody that works for Peterson's for Parkinson's. Of course, your lovely wife, Tammy, yeah, being a part of it as well.
And, she is. Yeah, she helped me get going with it. It was great.
One of my favorite events that I've gotten to cover in my career was the Winter Classic down in Dallas on New Year's Day. And we did a special edition of Smashville Live there with Darren McFarlane and Willie Donick. And they were able to talk to John Miller from NBC Sports on just how the Winter Classic came to be. You'll hear that conversation next. It's all brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Beer, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into this best of edition of Smashville Live, all brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Beer. Chase McCabe hanging out with you. We went to Dallas on New Year's Day for the Winter Classic. It was really cool, one of my favorite events that I ever got to be a part of and cover. Darren McFarlane and Willie Donick anchored our coverage of Smashville Live on that day, and they were able to talk to John Miller. He's the president of NBC Sports and pretty much the guy that helped hatch this entire thing, this concept of playing an outdoor game on New Year's Day. It was a really cool conversation, and here's what he had to say.
John, how you doing? Thanks doing this.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, and I can't think of a better way to kick off 2020 than the Cotton Bowl in front of 85, 90,000 fans and to watch a good hockey game, hopefully.
Well, for 12 years now, I've known where my New Year's Eve and New Year's Day is going to be, so it's been kind of nice. It's been good. You don't have to plan, but yeah. No, they've done a tremendous job with this facility, and I have to give props to Steve Mayer from the NHL and his team because they have really made this building sparkle.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
Let's go back to the beginning. Like, where was this? I'm always wondering, it wasn't in a lab, was it? Where was this hatched?
I would love to tell you that I have that kind of vision. I quite honestly don't. So here's the deal. We had been in the college football bowl business for a long time. And we did the Rose Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl. And then we eventually got out of the bowl business in the late 1990s. We had one bowl, the Gator Bowl, which we eventually walked away from. And so we were looking for programming on New Year's Day. In 2004, we had made a deal with the NHL to become their new broadcast partner. And so we were looking for ways to kind of kick off the relationship. And in October of 2004, the Boston Red Sox had been down 3-0 to the Yankees in the baseball LCS, came back and won it 4-3. Devastated Yankee fans, Red Sox fans celebrated the whole deal. And I thought, what would be more fun than maybe having the Bruins come play the Rangers and have them play in Yankee Stadium on New Year's Day, a great way to celebrate our new NHL relationship. So like most things, you take the idea to a couple of folks. My boss was a guy named Dick Ebersol, who's really a genius in the sports business. And he got it and he embraced it. And then we went and talked to the NHL. And interestingly enough, Gary Bettman, who's the commissioner, was interested but was a little bit nervous because they don't have a special events group at the NHL. So that would have been a problem for them. But we went to the Bruins. The Bruins were interested and were open to a lot of things. We went to the Rangers, and the Rangers had an issue because they couldn't play games outside of Madison Square Garden because of their lease deal with the city of New York. But they were willing to explore, you know, opportunities. And then I went up to see the folks at Yankee Stadium to see what they thought, and they basically laughed me out of their office and said, Yankee Stadium is the house that Ruth built. We're never going to play anything but baseball here. And then shortly after that, we had a lockout, and so everything got put on the back burner. But I continued to be somewhat of a nudge, and I kept pushing people that this was how we really wanted to start our hockey thing. And in late 2006, a guy named John Collins came on board at the NHL, who's a really sharp marketing guy who I had worked with when he was at the NFL. And I told him, you know, the concept, and he said, well, let me see what we can do. And he came back and saw me in the spring of 07 and said, well, only one NHL team has agreed to explore hosting it, and that's the Buffalo Sabres. And I said, sold. We'll have Pittsburgh come up and play. They were, you know, Sidney Crosby was coming into the league. We thought it would be a great opportunity for us to showcase them. And so we played the first game on January 1st, 2008, up at Rich Stadium in Buffalo. And I remember pulling into the parking lot, and it reminded me of the AFC Championship game from 1991. It was packed, and people were tailgating and grilling outside and throwing a football and doing all kinds of stuff. And I said, wow, they got a lot of people. They sold out that first game in about an hour.
Wow.
And so they had 75,000 people in Buffalo. We had a great game. It went to a shootout. Sidney Crosby scored the winning goal. Unfortunately, the home team couldn't deliver a victory for all those fans, but it snowed. And the next thing you know, they're saying, well, what are we going to do it next year? And to be honest with you, we had thought it was a one and done. We thought maybe we would get 1 year out of it and we'd find something else for New Year's Day. And now it's become a tradition. I believe I heard last night they've done 26 outdoor games, including the Stadium Series games, including the Heritage Classic up in Canada. And it's a lot of fun. And the people who come have a great time. The teams really enjoy it. I watched a bunch of the stars out here when I first got here, just walking around and staring up at the crowd and the stadium and stuff like that. And you can tell that they're excited about being here, too.
How nerve-wracking was it? Like, is this going to be a big deal? Is this going to be a flop? That's the part that is always, and you're in the unknown, right? You've never done this before. Where is there going to be hiccups and things going to go wrong? How are we going to handle that? What was that like?
At 10:30 in the morning when we pulled up to the stadium, it started raining. And we knew that if we had gotten washed out and rained out, that would have been it.
Yeah.
There wasn't enough support among other owners and the league, and they didn't have a special events group that really would have propelled it to the next level. So we did have all those fears. And today is a perfect day for the Winter Classic. You've got cloud cover. It's going to be in the high 40s, low 50s, so you don't have any, you know, real issues there. But, yeah, you have all those things that you worry about. And you worry about whether or not the fans will embrace it. You know, a lot of people told me nobody's coming out on New Year's Day to watch a hockey game. And I said, you don't know hockey fans. Hockey fans will show up and follow their teams because they love the sport. And want to be part of this.
That's going to do it for this best of edition of Smashville Live. Really appreciate all of you and all the support that we've had this year, whether you were coming out to see us at any of the Brew House locations or Boombas or Drake's in Cool Springs or anywhere else that we were at. It was a lot of fun to be a part of. And I appreciate everyone for supporting me and allowing me to do it. All of our sponsors as well, New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Beer. That's going to do it for this edition of Smashville Live, but stick around. Penalty Box Radio is next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.